Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2021. There's just a few introductory notes before we get on to the first stream. There has been quite a lot of work behind the scenes this year to set all of this up. I know that there's been anticipation, and I hope that you're all excited and pumped up for Millennial this year. There are going to be, I think, 64 streams in total over the next 2 weeks or so. So I hope it goes well. And a few things. There is Super Chat by Entropy and Cointree. And then there are, and also there is a t-shirt this year, some merchandise. I thought, why not? And people often ask for that. There's a Bitcoin Lightning wallet that if you want to donate, and there are other donation options on my website. And also there's an NFT this year, an NFT graphic. Now, that's the first time this year. It's an animated thing, and it's an experiment. So I'll see how that goes. I thought it'd be nice to have something to commemorate each year, each millennial. And so there is only one copy of it. There can be only one owner. And it's on an auction. And all of that is linked from the millennial.com website. So, okay. With all of that said, I don't think there's any need really for much more to be in terms of an introduction. Let's just get on with it. So the first stream is with the golden one, Marcus Fallon, and or Fallon. Did I mispronounce that?
Fallen.
Yeah. Okay. So welcome to Millennial 2021 and thanks for appearing.
Ah, thank you for having me. Good to be the first one. I want to make it a good first introduction. So yeah, good to be here.
Right. Obviously everyone knows who you are. There's no need for to introduce you and talk about that. And people can be, again, people will be linked to your own website from my website. I think it would be worth, before we get on to the topic of your new book, which understandably you want to tell people about, what would you say about the last, because I think it would be good to get your opinion, just broad thoughts about COVID, the last 2 years, this maelstrom that has taken over the world over since March or February 2020. Because obviously it is a very challenging, confusing time, and also it's a challenge for masculinity to survive and to understand this new landscape, to understand the new world that we're now in or heading into, because a lot of this, well, really all of the certainties that our fathers and grandfathers and great grandfathers had, are being swept away, and we're being asked to live in a world of automation. Post-scarcity, nanotechnology, transhumanism, etc., globalism, of course. So it's all quite confusing. So give me your thoughts about the last 2 years, COVID, the lockdowns, the vaccines, the Great Reset, everything.
Yeah, so basically, when it first came in the spring of 2020, I sort of fell for the hype a bit, I suppose, because the initial response from the establishment, at least in Sweden, was to be very open. You know, there is nothing to fear. We will keep our openness. So usually I'm not a contrarian person at all, but over all this time, I've learned to be a bit skeptical towards the establishment. So when they said something, I automatically sort of went against it. Then, of course, in retrospect, I'm quite happy that Sweden didn't do all of these lockdowns. So for anyone who isn't aware, Sweden...
Yeah, this was quite a unique thing. I mean, I think it was Sweden and Belarus were the only two in Europe that didn't go into lockdown. So please tell us all about that, because I think people haven't experienced this.
Yeah. So my initial response was, I wish Sweden had, you know, closed the borders for many reasons, but I quarantined myself until I got bored with it, because I wanted to train. So I basically went back to to regular life, but I was a bit cautious in the beginning, at least, because I don't know what was going on with the virus itself. So of course I was a bit cautious, and at that stage, I thought Sweden should maybe close the borders and be a bit more.
Well, it was strange, wasn't it?
It was strange.
It was strange that they were telling us that it was a really serious situation, but we won't close the borders, and certainly not to refugees. That would be crazy. So you see that and you think, well, is it a serious situation or not? Mm. Is this virus a deadly plague or not? It doesn't make sense.
Mm. So yeah, anyway, Sweden didn't have any lockdowns at all. Of course, some places shut down by their own volition. Some gyms shut down temporarily. My gym, sort of like an underground gym, it was open the entire time. No issue about it. Many people who train there, I talked to them, of course, and they work in construction and stuff like that. And they worked through it all as well. And everything sort of went on as normal. And fun thing here as well, that Swedes are quite vain, and I say this in a good way, and this time actually we didn't really see many people wearing face masks because it looks bad, and so it was beneath the dignity of a vain Swedish person to have it. So
it obscures those fine Nordic features.
exactly. So I had a face mask I think two times. So once, and that was in the beginning, because we had to go with a daughter to get, I don't know what it was, but then we put it on the way in to a center, but then we took it off because it looked silly and it's uncomfortable. The second time I had it was when I went to Germany to check up on some logistics, and then you had to have it on the airplane, but in Germany it was sort of like mostly for show. Some people went with just a bandana tied around, so and I mean, yeah, mostly for show, but otherwise in Sweden nothing at all. And I made a video, if it was late last year, so about a year ago, titling it "I Was Wrong," so sort of like a clickbait video, but where I basically said that of course I should have seen it coming, that because I had made a video previously during the spring where I said, you know, Sweden, what's going on, should we close down society for a bit? But then of course I understood that the great catastrophe of it, with many local cafes and restaurants and small shops got completely wrecked, and Amazon got the revenue instead. And of course the virus as an excuse to take away liberties. So I admitted myself being wrong there, and of course I should have seen that coming. Now we know better.
Well, to be fair, it's a fairly extreme thing that happened. I mean, I wouldn't blame anyone for not predicting it, or, you know, the very idea that they would deliberately devastate the economy. That would, in 2019, it would have seemed unbelievable that they would do that, because we were always hearing how precious, how important the economy was. The economy was more important than anything else. Mm. It's more important than culture, borders, safety, crime levels, education. Nothing mattered more than the economy. Mm. And then, out of the blue, they willingly, voluntarily do huge damage to the economy that's going to take generations. Or would take generations to fix. So I wouldn't blame anyone. I certainly didn't predict that. So when it started and you realize all these businesses are dying, these old small family businesses, independent businesses, they're all going, and it's only going to be Amazon and Google that survive all of this. That's quite incredible.
Yeah, so actually it's... I think Germany, because Germany has a bit of a different culture than Sweden when it comes to having small towns and having locally owned shops and restaurants. And it's just heartbreaking to see. I don't want to black pill too much because I suppose everyone knows what's going on there. But if you have the opportunity, do support your local economy, and especially these, you know, local cafes, restaurants that have been in the same family for generations. There are those places in Germany, I know. And yeah, they're, of course, they can't get any customers because of restrictions and yeah, what to do. So it's quite blackpilling. But anyway, back to Sweden. Now, of course, they are discussing whether there should be a vaccine passport, which is, of course, yeah, I don't really have any good take there. I have no intention of taking
that. That means that the vaccine would be pretty much mandatory.
Yeah, so it would be like on trains and maybe flights. And I know Canada has done something similar where you can't escape the place unless you have a vaccine, unless you sort of smuggle yourself.
I'm actually wearing an Escape from New York t-shirt just now. So just when you say Escape from Canada, you know, it reminded me of that. Sorry.
Oh, well, it's suitable. But yeah, so we'll see. I can't say too much now. I don't know what will happen. I don't think anyone knows exactly what will happen. But gauging from everything else, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that you have like, yeah, vaccine passport to do to basically anything. Of course, I do feel really bad for all younger guys who, you know, for me right now, it doesn't really bother me if I can't leave Sweden or if I can't go on a train somewhere. It doesn't really matter. But I do feel bad for the younger generations who are, yeah, getting their lives, well, perhaps not destroyed, but, you know, a lot of adventure being taken away from them. So, yeah, bad times.
Yeah, I mean, it must be very strange for those people who were like 18 2 years ago and they were just about to go to university and whatever. And I mean, I don't really know. I guess it was different in every country, in every area. But I can imagine a lot of people thought that they had a life plan sorted out for the next 5 or 10 years of their lives. And it's just gone. And then... the culture starts changing, and we hear about the Great Reset and so on. And so how do you then plan? I mean, this is something I noticed that people, you don't hear people now, like post all of this, you don't hear people talking about the future so much. People don't talk about their own personal life plans anymore. I just don't hear it. Whereas it used to be a normal thing for people, especially young people, to talk about. Whereas I think that, you know, talking about career, where they might move to, marriage, having a family, this just doesn't seem to be as much a part of everyday conversation as it was 2 years ago. Now, maybe I have imagined this, maybe I'm inventing this narrative in my head, but I just think that people are far more tied to the here and now than they were even 2 years ago. And I think this can only be a direct result of, well, everything being switched off. The economy and culture, socializing, all of that. And of course, it also makes you subject to authority, to the state, the government, in a way that none of us were 2 years ago. So, I mean, what I mean by that is that I don't think there is that sense of independence that people used to have. And that this is going to, and I think that's exactly what they want. Well, like, you know, the globalists, the oligarchs, I think this is what they want. I think they want subject populations who just do as they're told. So again, this is the kind of thing that we're going to have to contend with in the future, in the fairly near future, I think. I mean, would you have any thoughts about that? Or is this stuff that you haven't sort of considered? I don't know if I'm, you know, a limb here.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, it sort of feels like many people are just trying to wait it out, wait to see what the next move will be. Will it be completely impossible to live a normal life without a vaccine? Of course, I don't think anyone really wants to take the vaccine, so it's more like you're taking it to be able to live a normal life. Is it worth it? I'm not a doctor. I don't want to say too much because I don't know enough about it. But what I can say, of course, is it's quite easy to see this, the encroaching state, what you're doing. And if they can push around people like this, what will be the next step? Having a passport for not having committed wrong think. So, I mean, I don't want to black pill now. So many black pills that are, many people are black pill as it is. So I don't want to say,
I don't think you'd be black pilling people. You know, I mean, obviously I don't want, I think it's important at Christmas that we don't get people depressed and whatever. But I also think that people are, we're only talking about topics that are on people's minds anyway, throughout the whole year. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about that. I mean, the vaccine, you know, what I would say about, and this is all stuff that we were sort of saying throughout last year, was the big thing about the vaccine, the big thing about the virus, is that the virus has a 99.6% survival rate. So only 0.4% mortality. And therefore, I mean, that is the only statistic that I think anyone needs to know in order to see that all of this is very strange indeed. It's very strange that we're being, that all of this has happened because of a virus that is that non, you know, chronic.
Something else I thought about when I contemplate suddenly the state, the various regimes, they care about the well-being of their population. And I find it quite funny, as you say, over 99% survival rate. And if they were truly serious about wanting to optimize the health of a population, they would ban alcohol, for example, or, you know, institute more better diet, ban seed oils or whatever, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, there are 100 things they could do. If they actually wanted that. I mean, again, there are these quite glaring contradictions that emerge because of COVID. Like, you know, we didn't do any of this for swine flu or SARS or Ebola. Why now? You know, this kind of stuff.
So, I mean, I'm not against vaccinations. I have a few vaccinations myself. My daughter has a few for ticks and for some other, you know, the traditional stuff that has been proven throughout the ages to be a good vaccine to have. So I'm not against it. But at the same time, when it's this and when they are so insistent, and it's the same sort of regime that tells me that mass immigration from the third world is good for me. So, I mean, I am a bit skeptical when these very same people are telling me to do something for my health. I don't really believe it's good in the least. So, again, I don't want to be a contrarian or even a dissident or anything, but when something is quite obviously wrong, I have cause to be skeptical.
Well, indeed, this is part of the skepticism that a lot of people feel, is that they know that these governments don't care about our safety, for example, because they're bringing in large numbers of people who are known to be more prone to crime. So that's nonsense. It's the same with everything else, like the education, infrastructure, welfare. They've never cared about this stuff before. So and our own well-being, I mean, our cultures have been dismantled over the last 100 years. So in many ways, and you know, the roles of male and female have been dismantled. None of that was good for us. So it just doesn't add up that suddenly they care about us like this. But also the lie is obvious because of, well, the emerging statistics about COVID and about the vaccine. It's all very murky. It's all very complicated and confusing, I think deliberately so. But what is clear is that people are not dropping dead. And of course, that brings us back to the fear-mongering videos from China last February, March, where people were, footage of people just dropping dead in the street. I mean, you know, I never used to be much of a conspiracy theorist. I really wasn't into that stuff. But, I mean, you know, everything's changed now.
And also this was, of course, a global event. But in the summer of 2020, hype like crazy about Corona. And then suddenly Black Lives Matter Corona takes a break magically for like 2 months, and then people can gather to protest and stuff. And no one, I mean, I'm talking about in the mainstream, no one even raises the point, the obvious point of that, okay, these individuals, they can gather for someone dying in America, in the Swedish capital, to protest against whatever, police brutality or whatever. And no one even says anything about it. So it's, all of these things. But to mention something white-pilling, at least, that there are so many that in, I suppose, all of the West have gotten woken up to the fact that the regimes aren't really our friends. Then, of course, in my view, when I have looked upon the discourse over the last year, I would, of course, want people to be angry and upset that we're being ethnically cleansed in our own countries, that we're being genocided in a nice and slow fashion, but it's still a genocide. We're being replaced, and I just wished people would be angry because of that. But now, of course, they have a different thing to be angry about. I just hope that they can understand, okay, the regime is doing this to us, and they're also doing this other bad thing, which is, of course, a population replacement. So if I want to white pill anyone, it would be to point out that many more people are a bit they view the current regimes in a different light.
It definitely has increased skepticism towards the government, and the mainstream media as well, I think, has suffered, especially because of, you know, just the blatant hypocrisy with, well, more recently with Kyle Rittenhouse, but also with George Floyd and all of that. I think it there's always a portion of the public who are awakened by each of these things. But I think it's what you've said there is interesting, because I think that, I mean, I spent, I don't know, what, 6 years, five, talking about the population replacement, the great replacement, very frequently. But since COVID, that has really fallen away, partly because obviously there's this new, much more like very pressing, immediate situation, but also because the apparent level of surveillance that's being brought in will make political dissidents pretty much very difficult. This is the really scary stuff about the, you know, Bill Gates and George Soros and Klaus Schwab, these kinds of guys that we, you know, that people joke about them being like James Bond villains, and yeah, they are. But it's also serious, you know, because they seem to want a world of pretty maximum control over the public, and in that world, complaining about mass immigration or multiculturalism, or even, you know, drag queen story hour, LGBT in the schools, that's not going to be possible. You know, this is a really pertinent thing about, you know, the whole Great Reset.
Yeah, definitely. The demographic situation is, of course, the bigger topic, but as you say, the more pressing concern is the ever increasing totalitarian state of the 1984 society. I can't take credit for this myself, but someone says that we're moving from Brave New World to 1984, so we're going from a bit softer to a bit more hard, and it's
I saw that meme the other day. I can't remember what it was, but I know the one you're talking about. I think that for most of the population, it will remain Brave New World. I think that because the Soma happy, just sensory pleasure, I think they'll continue to have that, because it is. And Aldous Huxley said this about Orwell, about, you know, he said that the world that Orwell had invented in 1984 was not as convincing as the world he had invented for Brave New World, because it's simply easier to keep people happy. It's easier to keep them just, you know, well-fed, warm. In a post-industrial society, you can set up the systems to just do that, if money isn't an option and isn't a problem. You can just do that. You don't need to go through like the Ministry of Truth, the secret police, the propaganda, and all that, the pro feed. So it's actually just easier to keep them, you know, docile.
Mm.
But I think that clearly there is a percentage of the population, 5-10%, who, like us, who are inquisitive and curious and rebellious. So the government is going to have to take a different approach with it, with them.
Mm.
Say something black, white pilling about that, for God's sake.
Yeah, I can only hope that it will lead to in Sweden thus far. I hope it stays this way, but the police, they haven't been as heavy-handed as they've been in in demonstrations in Germany, etc. I can only hope that many of these policemen, they will one day say, enough, this isn't what I signed up for, and go in a different direction. And hopefully they will get wake up to the greater plan at hand also, so the great replacement. That's what I can hope for, at least to end on a white pilling note for the lockdowns.
Yeah, what I would say is, especially in Austria and Germany, there and the Netherlands as well, of course, recently, there have been huge demonstrations and protests. And I think that the longer this goes on, more and more people are going to realize that they don't know anyone who has died from COVID off COVID. And more and more people are going to realize that COVID seems to be getting less serious all the time, because it's mutating into a strain that can survive by not killing people. So that's what happens with these viruses. So more and more people are going to realize that, and it's going to therefore seem more and more ridiculous that, you know, we have all of these restrictions and we have all of this surveillance and we have these creepy people like Klaus Schwab telling us that we have to change everything. That is going to seem ever more strange to, I think, ever more people. So that's a cause for hope, I would say. The other thing is, it might well be that the powers that be, the oligarchs, the NGOs, have simply underestimated the degree of rebellion. They might well have miscalculated how they have to implement this program. And I think it's very possible that they will make tactical mistakes along the way. So, there is definitely cause for hope. And I certainly don't want to blackpill anyone, and especially not at this time of year. So I wouldn't want to give anyone the impression that, you know, I'm defeatist about this. But we are problem analyzers on the right. That's one of our strengths, but, you know, one of our weaknesses as well. So on that note, what would you say in terms of ways that people, that men, let's concentrate on men, can strengthen themselves up against this kind of thing, spiritually, physically, nutritionally, that kind of thing? I mean, what would you say to some guy who was just depressed about all of this and is, you know, he's a mess, he's a lump? What would you say to that guy to help him, to advise him?
So first and foremost, I suppose we have quite a few American listeners tuning in now, and this is a big difference, and it took me quite a while to truly understand how much of a difference it is between Sweden and America. To a certain extent, to the UK, I suppose you're in between somewhere, but the medical industry in the US is it's not your friend, to put it mildly. And if you view it as an enemy, more or less, who, of course, they are predatory companies. They want to maximize a profit on your unhealth. If you view it that way, if you view your own health as a way for someone to attack you in various ways. And then, of course, you have why I say this is such a big difference is that the food in America is so much worse than in Sweden, for example, with, you know, cattle being filled to the brim with antibiotics, and you have seed oils in practically everything. You don't grow up with a good diet, which makes you more susceptible to various illnesses, and then you get prescribed some sort of medication, and yeah, you go to the doctor and the doctor says to you, aha, you have a pain here, take this medication. He prescribes you something instead of just looking at how you live your life, how you eat, how you sleep, how much time you spend in nature, how much sunlight you get, how much you train, all of these different things. So if you view, because of course, as you know, we've known each other for a few years now, and we've had a few live streams before. I've also talked about, you know, pornography and training and not being blackpilled and all of these things. Now, to tie this into the whole COVID thing, it's also to understand that side of thing, that if they want to attack you, and I don't want to sound like they, it's not really so complicated. It's companies that they want to make a profit, basically. Then, of course, you have more insidious forces when it comes to perhaps pornography and stuff like that, and transgender. But all that aside, when it comes to these health things, the less dependent you are on the healthcare system, the better off you will be. So that's something if we talk about. Of course, as I've said, you know, if you live in a multicultural city, it's good to know how to fight. It's good to know friends that you can go with. It's good to, if you have the option of having a weapon, again, for all Americans listening, you probably do have the option. It's good. That's over here. Then we also have this part where you have if you get into the medication side of the war on you, so to speak, you're out on thin ice. So something you can keep in mind there also, that the more of a distance you can keep from that. So it's similar to, I don't know, staying safe again in a multicultural city. And the same thing, if you want to stay safe from a predatory industry, yeah, try to take care of your health to and as much as possible. And of course, it starts with your diet. So, yeah, I don't know if that was an answer at all. I just rambled on a bit.
I think it's interesting that what you said, one of the things you hit on there was don't become the medical industry, big pharma, the health sector in America, any private healthcare system, any capitalistic healthcare system will try to get you reliant on it, dependent on it. And I think I think that's true. It's also true that state-run healthcare services might do the same thing, but for more bureaucratic reasons, like to give themselves work. But and that's a different thing. I think that the point is that the interesting thing here is that I think that part of you could say adulthood, or you could say masculinity, perhaps both. Part of that is not being dependent on things, not needing things. Being able to survive without, you know, pleasure, that treat, that reassurance, that person, being self-sufficient. I think that's a huge thing. And it's also something that's massively under attack in the modern world, which clearly wants, it tries to make young men, make men into like babies. They're dependent, needy, weak, self-doubting, insecure, miserable, you know, this kind of thing. And I think that, I mean, this is why what you do is, I think, so important and so useful, because it reminds, fundamentally, it reminds young men, and not so young men as well, that, you know, they are the captain of their ship. And that they can be probably a hell of a lot more self-sufficient and less needy than they currently are. And I think that's just a massively useful thing for men to hear.
I just need to say that the healthcare system in Sweden isn't all too great either. So for all of my fellow Swedes listening, whatever you do, don't get sick, don't get into any sort of trouble, because you don't want to deal with the healthcare system. So Just wanted to have that pointed out. And this is not because the nurses or the doctors in Sweden are bad. It's because there isn't enough money, because that money goes to the great replacement. But yeah, anyway, back to the point about young men. So I think it was, or I know it's quite obvious, that becoming a man 200 years ago was a lot easier, because you could probably get a wife at like 20. You could get a good job, you could get an income to supply for a family. I mean, what 20-year-old guy can do that today? So of course, back in the day, you got things served to you. Here, now you're a man and you grow up, you grow into the role. But for 20-year-old today, I mean, it's hard for them to grow into something. It is disheartening to see many of these lost guys, but it's also important to know that it was a lot easier back in the day to be a man, because then you had the entire society is giving you stuff to do. Sure, it was rough times, hard work, but at the same time, I'd say it could be even harder now today for a guy who's been...
It's harder in a different way. It's psychologically harder.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's such a thing as pornography. I like to take this example because it's such a widespread thing, and it's so good to use as an example, because you have the strongest, basically one of the strongest urges in a man a few clicks away. And I mean, how to break that? You need a supreme willpower. So it's, again, this is not my take on it, but someone said that breaking out from pornography, it's sort of like an initiation rite for young men, that when you do it, yeah, that's at least something. And this is also why I talk a lot about it, because if you can kick out that habit, you have proven yourself to be mentally strong, and then you can probably do a lot more. Same thing when I talk about going to the gym. I'm not necessarily saying it because I want everyone to get jacked, or because everyone has to look like a Greek statue or whatever, but it's because when you go into the gym, there are so many different things that fall into place. So it's like you have a puzzle of your life. The gym is like the frame of it, and then you can put in different pieces. So I train now to sleep well, basically. If I train hard, I sleep well. If I sleep well, I can be more productive and I have more energy and stuff. So the gym, it goes much farther than just being, you know, jacked or whatever. So those two things I push on, because they're two fundamental things. You can defeat the demon of pornography, then you can defeat a lot of other things, because compared to pornography, I don't really know what else can be. Well, of course, certain drugs. Of course, if you have a physiological need for whatever drug, it can be hard. But I'd say at least that's a good starting point. And then, of course, the gym. Then, in other terms, you know, I always recommend guys to read a lot. There are so many books. When you get into the love of reading and you get that excitement that you always have something to read, it's really great. So that's something also. Just read like crazy. And the more knowledge you find, the more thirsty you will be for knowledge, and the more you will read, and the busier you keep. So if you have a young guy who goes from being black-pilled and he doesn't have any direction, and then he first, of course, he battles within, leaving pornography, leaving a few other vices he might have. He might spend an excessive amount of time playing video games. Now, I do play video games every once in a while. Of course, not in an excessive manner, but I do have some experience with at least playing in moderation. But anyway, he cuts down on that. He starts going to the gym, and then his diet cleans up because he wants to see results better. He sleeps better. He gets into his circadian rhythm. He starts feeling even better because the body heals in a different way. That's also something I thought to mention in terms of staying healthy overall and not being dependent upon various medication, is to get your sleep and your circadian rhythm in tune with its nature. Because if it doesn't, you will probably experience a lot of issues.
Yeah, this is definitely something that I struggle with, because it's just so easy to stay up. But I also think this is, or I've been told, this is something that is very common in cities, urban dwellers. Mm. Whereas in the countryside, people are it's far more of a natural thing to just have a normal sleeping pattern. It's in the cities where, you know, things go on all night, and people are detached from each other, so they spend time online on by the computer. So that's where it's much more difficult to have a normal pattern.
It's also to do with the amount of light. So to give a practical advice to everyone listening, you can install Twilight if you have an Android, at least. I do suppose iPhone, that they have something similar. So that's a blue light filter that you can, it can go on automatically at like 20 in the evening or something. So 8 p.m. in the evening, it can go on to reduce the amount of blue light. I have it on my computer screen as well. So it goes on at 20 or 21 and it reduces the amount of blue light. Of course, definitely have it on your cell phone as well, especially if you lie in bed and you scroll, you need to have a blue light filter. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that the body, of course, it understands light as, you know, what part of the day are we in. So that's a massive key, I'd say, to just feel good with yourself, to be productive and to be healthy, is to get a good sleep. And of course, training hard, training so that you get tired in the evening, it helps a lot when it comes to sleep. I can feel it as well if I haven't really trained, my sleep isn't as deep, and then the next day I'm a bit more tired, so then maybe I don't want to train, so it goes down in a bad spiral. Whereas if I have trained hard and if I've been productive, it's a different thing. So yeah, revolutionary teaching here at Millennial. Sleep, go to bed early. That's the revolutionary.
Well, it's stuff that we all need to be reminded of, especially nowadays, because, you know, there is so much detachment and it's so easy not to live in a normal way, you know, in the way that our ancestors did. I don't think we need to go on any more about that, but I think the main point that I would want to emphasize here is this concept of self-sufficiency, this concept that part of being an adult, definitely part of being a man, is being less needy than you were as a child and more in control of your needs, more in control of your desires. You know, this stuff should be obvious to everyone, and it should be said to young people. It should be said to in school and whatever. I don't think any of it is said anymore. I think people are just left to their own devices, and of course they mess up. So with all of that said, I know that you have just released a new book a new edition of a book. So would you like to tell people about that?
Yes, definitely. So it's Dauntless, the Wild Hunt edition. So it initially came out in 2019, but it wasn't the book I wanted to release. So this year I decided to remake it into what I wanted it to be the first time around. So I spent most of the autumn doing it. Didn't really make all too many videos on YouTube, and I took it easy in many other regards as well, to just focus on it. Then of course my grammar, my English grammar has improved a bit since I started writing it, so I had to go through and fix some of that as well, and just flesh out a lot of the concepts and the many other topics as well. I have gotten a deeper understanding of especially terms such as meditation, so that chapter is a bit longer, and these sort of things. So basically what it is, it's a handbook. I want to present something, a practical guide for primarily young men. So it's basically if someone asked me, you have a unique opportunity to tell all Western young men something, and what I can tell them is to read that particular book, and it contains the knowledge I wish I had when I was younger, because absolutely no one told me of these things. And I do know that many of these guys, they don't hear this from anyone else either. So basically it starts with some training, some nutrition, then goes over to some philosophy, some thoughts on relationships and tribes and hierarchy and stuff like that. Goes into some basic politics as well. It's not a political book, but it's just to give a solid worldview that someone can expand upon, especially if you have some young Western man fresh out of high school or whatever, and they've gotten, of course, indoctrinated by some leftist teacher. So it's just a little nudge in a different direction. So I say that, of course, biology is real, race is real, and society is a racial construct and not the other way around. So people understand that, and it's completely okay that it's that way. So, something along those lines is the book, and yeah, quite happy with it.
So this is a book that people might want to, and I know that there is still time to buy it to order it before Christmas, isn't there?
I will be completely honest. I had hoped that would be the case. If you are in the UK, I don't know, to be honest. I can't say anything for the UK. I can say for Germany, Sweden, Netherlands, Belgium, and some of the other neighboring countries to Germany, that should be fine. But for anyone else, I can't say too much, especially not to the US, because the last Christmas was a bloody mess.
I've got to say, my copy has arrived, and that was only 3-4 days.
Oh, right, so, right, good,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, so, and awesome, that's in Britain. So, I think there is still time for people to order it before Christmas. And would you say that they might want it for themselves or for young men who they know?
I mean, it's for everyone, really. It's aimed to men, of course, because I mean, if you're a woman, you can also read it and take to heart the knowledge and insights, but it's more, when I wrote it, it was more, I am giving knowledge to a younger man so he can get a good start in life. But I mean, if you're an older guy as well, it doesn't matter. You can still implement the teachings and hopefully find it a beautifully written book. So I hope everyone will like it.
All right. So, Excellent. Okay, well, let's leave it at that, unless there's any other stuff that you'd like to touch on before we go. I mean, we did talk about COVID and the lockdown and all that, but it's interesting to hear that your perspective, because obviously it has been less of a thing in Sweden than it has been in Britain and everywhere else. So I think I can sort of detect that in your attitude towards it. I can tell that you're less bothered about it than we are down here.
Well, I must admit something as well, that I did also, I sort of, as you know, I've been in the Patriot game for quite a while, and I thought when this COVID came, I sort of thought to myself, I will not take a step back, but I didn't have the energy to read up all too much about it, because I'd already been in so intensely on other stuff, including writing Dauntless, so I didn't really look into it perhaps as much as I should have. But what I've done, of course, for everyone following me on Telegram, I've just tried to repost and reshare from people who are posting about it. So I do take it seriously, of course I do. It's just I didn't have the energy to go in all too deep in the rabbit hole that was COVID.
I think it was the opposite for me, because I had spent like the last 2 years, I had sort of had writer's block. I didn't know what to talk about, because I felt I'd said everything about race and all that, and so I sort of wasn't sure what to do. And then this came, and it was a new thing to analyze and read about and learn about and work out. So it was a different experience. But of course, what you're saying is true. It's a point to make that a lot of this is scientific and logistical, bureaucratic, this kind of stuff. It's very difficult for ordinary people to grasp this, and so this is why they have to rely on the experts, because it's so, to understand virology, the biology and all this is bloody complicated. Why we rely on them.
I will say that I have spent my fair share of time studying PubMed articles, but that was back in the day when I looked at purely bodybuilding and health. But another culprit, so to speak, in terms of not having studied so much about COVID, is I've began reading more about stuff like this. So some esoteric stuff and meditation. So that actually I intensified these type of things when I reread Dauntless. And of course, before then, I wanted to experiment a bit more with myself. So I have been meditating upon the universe when others have talked about COVID. So, I do understand the gravity of the situation. And I would lie if I said I wasn't worried about the direction Sweden also is going. And of course, as it is right now, I don't know when I will ever be able to leave Sweden again, which is, of course, heartbreaking. To not be able to partake in conferences. Those were always nice, to go to conference to speak and stuff.
We met quite a few conferences, didn't we? in Sweden and Britain for sure. I think Germany as well, and Finland, that one as well. Yeah, so if I remember correctly, so it was definitely a different era. Maybe we'll return to that. I don't know, but for now it is a turbulent time just now. So I think it is actually a time for people to concentrate on themselves, on their own lives, and on what they can control.
Something also to my perspective, as I've said also, that my ambitions, I've always been quite clear. Of course, I want to achieve regime change, but I view it in the long term. So when I'm 60 years of age, hopefully I have accumulated a lot of gravitas so I can be in a different situation. So I do try to pace myself as well so I don't burn out now, but I do take a step back and then take a few steps forward and to pace myself. So I have no intention of going out of the metapolitical. It's just I'm viewing it in the long term, and I will continue until we achieve our goals.
All right, excellent. Well, on that note, we'll end this one. This is the first stream of the first night of Millennial 2021. Later on, I have Philosophicat, and then Mark Malone, and then Oren McIntyre. So anyway, in the meantime, this was Marcus Follin, the Golden One. So thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good times.
Okay. And I will be back in about an hour. And in the meantime, I will leave you with this rather swish advert for the NFT.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the white stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.